Monday edition, Mr. Relevant, presented by Door County Distillery with you. It is football week. We have real football on Friday for the Wisconsin Badgers. The preseason is in the books for the Green Bay Packers. We have a game, what is it, like 11 days away, whatever the math is, next Friday for the Green Bay Packers week one in Brazil against the Philadelphia Eagles. We're done with the offseason. There's one more thing to happen in the offseason, which we'll talk about in a minute, and that is cut down day, which is tomorrow for the NFL. I believe 4 o'clock Eastern, so 3 o'clock our time tomorrow is when rosters need to be down to 53 people. So we have made it. Congratulations to you. I'm Alex Struff with you from the Gerber Law Offices. One Call, That's All Studios at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. Joshie DiMaggio is with me here as well. Producer Tiny Hands back at the Everlight Solar Studio in downtown Madison. Good to be back with you, fellas, after most of last week off. Appreciate Josh. Appreciate Tony Cartagena stepping in last Wednesday and Friday, respectively, for me as I did the statewide tour once again. Was up in Stevens Point. I was here in Milwaukee. I was over in Elkhart Lake. Was in Sheboygan a little bit. I was all over the state. But congrats to my friends Max and Kat getting married this weekend. It was a good time and was a nice little way to unplug ahead of football season, which officially gets going this week as the Wisconsin Badgers, unranked, open their season Friday at Camp Randall Stadium. They play host to Western Michigan for the first time, I think, in 20 years that these two teams going head-to-head on Friday at Camp Randall. So looking forward to that, and do want to dive, you know, off the bat here a little bit into expectations for the Wisconsin Badgers. Their official depth chart dropping today, official game week depth chart, which obviously there are still some things that can change for that. But our buddy Pablo Iglesias, our new teammate at ESPN Madison, was over there this morning and you know, taking a look at some of those things. I don't know that anything shocking in terms of the depth chart department popped out. You know, I think when you look at quarterback, you knew Tyler Van Dyke was going to win. Was going to win the quarterback job that was announced last week, and Ches Malusi going to end up being your lead back here. But just looking at it quickly, here looking at the official depth chart, actually unofficial depth chart, I believe is what it says. Vinny Anthony or C.J. Williams is your second receiver. Technically third is Bryson Green and Will Pauling will be your main two. Pauling, of course, will be your slot receiver. They've got a ton of studs at corner, is the other thing here. All right, Ricardo Hallman and Nizir Forquarin are going to be your two starters, but you also have guys like, I know they have a lot of faith in Jonas Taclona, who's a sophomore, wears number 21 for the Badgers. Defensive back overall, right? The safeties, Preston Zachman, Hunter Wohler, Kamoi Latu. You've got a ton of guys in that defensive backfield that are going to, at least hopefully, make an impact this upcoming season for the Badgers. So something to keep an eye on there. Offensive line continuing to shake out, but seems like from left to right, it will be Nelson Bruner Renfro, the redshirt senior transfer from Cincinnati, Huber at right guard, and then Riley Malman will be your starting right tackle. Seems like that's set as well, but Malusi will be your lead back for the Badgers, and Tyler Van Dyke will ultimately be your starting quarterback. So that just begs the question to me, as we get ready for game week, as the Badgers prepare to open their season on Friday at Camp Randall, what are the expectations for the Badgers in 2024? They've got a loaded schedule, and that's what we've talked about a lot this offseason. When you look at Alabama in week three at home at Camp Randall Stadium, when you think about the additions of Oregon to the Big Ten, when you have USC on your schedule in 2024, this is a loaded schedule on top of the already pretty good Big Ten that the Badgers play in. Right, they still got Iowa. They've still got Penn State. They've still got Minnesota and Nebraska at the end of the year. Nebraska's getting better in year two under their new head coach, relatively new head coach, Matt Rhule, came in the same year as Luke Fickell, obviously. So you've got a jam-packed schedule, 5 ranked opponents as it stands right now on your schedule, including 3 opponents in the top 10. I already mentioned that. Alabama, Penn State, Oregon, all in the top 10 of the AP poll this week. Alabama number 5, Penn State number 8, Oregon number 3, the third best team in the country, at least according to the AP poll. And then USC and Iowa also ranked 23 and 25 respectively. So of their 12 games, 5 of them as it stands against ranked opponents. You open the season Friday night, 8 o'clock kickoff. against Western Michigan. You can catch ESPN Wisconsin College Game Day beginning at 6 o'clock on ESPN Milwaukee, beginning at 4 o'clock, 4-hour pregame show Friday from Regent Street, getting you ready for kickoff and the season opener. I'm super intrigued, man. I'm super intrigued by this team. I'm intrigued by Luke Fickell and his ability to recruit. I'm intrigued by Phil Longo, whose offense was set to bring a totally different style to Madison last year, and it really wasn't as pretty as you expected. Now, injuries played a role in year one under Phil Longo and his offense. You lose Ches Malusi early in the season. You've got your quarterback banged up. You've got Braylon Allen banged up for a lot of last season. This year, you obviously hope for health, but you hope you kind of see that next chapter, that next evolution for the Badgers offense. So to me, it stands like this, and Hunter is the big college football fan on the program. I'm curious to get his thoughts momentarily. But for me, this needs to be an 8-win team, right? I mentioned 5 games against ranked opponents. You got to win at least one of them. And you should take care of business everywhere else. Western Michigan, South Dakota, Purdue, Rutgers, Northwestern, Nebraska, Minnesota. Those are games you should be winning. Right, when you have the hype around this program that you do by bringing in last year Luke Fickell, when you have the expectations of now this is an expanded playoff, and year after year it needs to keep looking prettier. As a 7-win team a year ago, counting the bowl game, you need to get to 8 in the regular season. Go 8-4, you get a good bowl bid, and hopefully next year you're competing for one of those top 12 spots in the college football programs, or playoff, excuse me. So to me, this should be an 8-4 team in the regular season. That, I think, is fair. But of course, they win 10, 11 games. Yeah, then they're competing for a college football playoff. I still think they're a year or two away from that, though. Though I do like the quarterback pickup with Tyler Van Dyke, and I love what they have brewing defensively under second-year coordinator Mike Tressel and head coach Luke Fickell. 8-4 is the expectation for me, Hunter.
Yeah, I think that's a fair number. I keep saying it. Like, I think this team can beat Alabama when they come into Camp Randall, and then you start looking at a 9-win
season.
Yeah,
you're sticking to that.
Yeah, I'm going to. Until I see otherwise from this team, I'll stick to it. You know, they can beat USC at USC. They can beat Iowa. So then suddenly you beat two of those top 25 teams, or, like, I think 3, and you're a 9-10-win team. But I think 8 wins is the floor for this team. That's what we should be expecting out of them. Yes. Because, like, you can beat Iowa, you can beat USC. So even if we hypothetically go through all of that and their losses are Alabama, Oregon, and Penn State, you're a 9-win team still. And, like, those are the 3 games where I'm like, yeah, I get it if they don't win them. So 9 wins is absolutely reasonable. 8 wins is like, okay, fine. Yeah, that's what they should be at. But it's an 8-9-win team window. And
now, real quick, to the point you're making, real quick, I mentioned at the top, right, 3 top 10 opponents as it stands right now. All 3 of those games are at Camp Randall Stadium. They host Alabama September 14th. They host Penn State October 26th. They host Oregon on November 16th. So all 3 of those games against, theoretically, your 3 toughest opponents, at least according to the AP poll, are at Camp Randall Stadium. So to win one of those, or to win 2 of those, certainly helps when you're playing on your home field. Continue.
Yeah, it absolutely does. And then that's where we start getting into the playoff window, especially with this expanded playoff. And when you have Texas and Oklahoma in the SEC, that really changes what might come out of the SEC, and you start having a better window for the Badgers to get into the playoff. But, you know, one of the things when it comes to the expectations is when you think about last season, schematically, don't expect this year to be different just because Braylon Allen is gone. They're going to go 3-4 wide receiver sets, but it's going to be a run-heavy offense still. That's the way that they're going to establish things. I saw Phil Longo was on the Big Ten Network, and they were asked about this, you know, the air raid stuff. And he's like, it's so funny because we went back and tracked it. And since he's been an offensive coordinator, whether it was at North Carolina or anywhere else he's been, he has run the ball 18 times more than he has thrown the ball. And we're calling this an air raid offense. Yeah, all he's done is modernize what they're running. It's still going to be Wisconsin run-first offense. That's what we are going to be as a program. So it's not going to really be all that different. You just now see 3-4 wide receivers instead of 2 tight ends and a fullback, and you're going to run it between the guards. Now you might actually bounce it outside and do some different things there. So the program, I'm really excited about where things are going with this team. And I think Jake Renfro, when you talk about the injury issues at center, I think that was a big issue. Tanner Bordellini last year at center, he's not a center. The dude's a guard. So his snaps were not good. They were getting back to Tanner Mordecai slow, and it just threw off this offense. I think him at center is going to be a huge upgrade for this team and a big reason why I like this 8-9 win window.
Okay. Yeah, I'm with you. 8-9 wins in the regular season. And, you know, 9 wins probably isn't good enough to be a top 12, but something to keep an eye on here as we enter year 2 under Fickell. I still think they're a year away, but and maybe even 2 years away. But hey, an 8-9 win season with some ranked wins, which they'll obviously have several opportunities to do this season, would be a notch that, hey, this team is headed in the right direction after, I don't want to call it a disappointing first year under Luke Fickell, but I think the expectations were so high that everybody thought, okay, 10-2 under Luke. That's just not what it was going to be last year, specifically in the new era of college football we live in, right? With the transfer portal and constantly things changing and the NIL, who can pay this guy more? And you see the turnover of rosters every year, right? This is from the top down. And plenty for the Badgers this offseason, but they fill some holes as well through the transfer portal, so we will keep an eye on that as we lead up to Friday's kickoff against Western Michigan. Do want to talk Packers now as they wrap up the preseason Saturday with a big win over the Baltimore Ravens. 38 Packers sit this week, mostly starters, but some other guys not playing as well, whether that be because they're sore or they're dealing with an injury. 38 guys didn't play. Still a big win. Still a nice win. But I don't know how much you can take away from that one and go, yeah, that'll translate to the regular season. There are a few battles that will translate to the regular season that we'll talk about momentarily, and that, of course, being the two main ones that Matt LaFleur talked about were the backup quarterback and the kicker, because obviously kickers will play every game. And the backup quarterback, you hope you never see him, but in the case that you're going to, I don't know how confident you feel about that position as it stands after preseason game number 3. But let's do what we do every week after a Packers game, and that is stock up, stock down. Only a few for you today. Like I said, there's not a ton that I think are super consequential of the regular season. I think all 5 guys we're going to talk about make the roster. Maybe 4 of the 5 guys make the roster that we're going to talk about here. Let's start with stock up, and that would be Christian Welch. Another turnover for him. He had a really big preseason. I called him last Monday the pride of Iola, Wisconsin. Christian Welch with another interception here. I think he solidified a roster spot. And look, I think the Packers are going to have some really tough decisions when it comes to this linebacker room to make before the cutdown deadline tomorrow afternoon. But Welch seemingly solidified a role on this team. Now, it's likely more special teams oriented than it will be actual defensive snaps. But after what you saw out of him in the preseason, you've got to be feeling better about his opportunity if he does hit the football field defensively this upcoming season. So Christian Welch is a stock up for me. Let's rip the Band-Aid off. Let's go stock down. That would be Sean Clifford, the backup quarterback. At least he was the backup quarterback. Now he was not the quarterback to throw an interception. That was Michael Pratt. But 6-for-14 is not a good mark. And he did that again last week. When you're completing less than 50% of your passes, I understand he's operating with the backups. He's operating with a backup defensive line. The thing with Clifford has always been he's a quote-unquote gamer, right? He plays better than he practices. I don't know how you can look at Clifford's resume this offseason and say, yeah, that's a guy who's a gamer. Sean Clifford hasn't been good this preseason. And I think he lost the starting or the backup quarterback job. I think Michael Pratt's going to win it, who they drafted out of Tulane this year. And in the 2023 fifth round pick, probably not going to make the roster. They might put him on the practice squad. But I don't feel confident about Clifford making the roster because I don't think the Packers likely will hold 3 quarterbacks on their active roster. But just to look at the numbers for the preseason for Sean Clifford, 22 of 43, that's 51%. Just over that 50% mark, 22 of 43, 207 yards, which is an average of 4.8 yards per throw, or completion, that would be, 1 touchdown, 1 interception, and a 62.8 quarterback rating. I don't know how good you feel about that when he's playing against backups. I know he's playing with backups, but playing against backups and taking primarily quarterback 2 snaps all preseason, I think the stock, once again, is down on Sean Clifford. I would guess he is probably not a member of the 53-man roster come tomorrow, Hunter.
You don't think that they would go a route of like, okay, we'll put Sean Clifford as the backup, and then you do Pratt just because of the fact that Clifford, having a year already in the NFL, he's not trying to figure things out and like learn what this is like and the weekly prep and everything that goes into it that way, so he can potentially be more valuable when it comes to like meetings and things like that. Like, you don't think they would maybe go some sort of a route that way and just give Pratt a year on the practice squad?
I wouldn't doubt it. I'm not ruling that out by any means. I just think the ceiling clearly is higher for Michael Pratt than it is Sean Clifford. And when it comes to the quote-unquote practice squad stash that they could likely do, whether it be Clifford, whether it be Pratt, or neither of them, I have a feeling you're more likely to get a contract offer if you're Michael Pratt than you are Sean Clifford from the practice squad. I think it's just evident the ceiling is probably higher there for a guy who's brand new to the league. So I wouldn't be shocked, no, to answer your question. I don't anticipate that happening. But I could be wrong. We will see. But Sean Clifford, stock down. Let's go back to stock up. How about the defensive touchdown scored by Anthony Johnson Jr., the former seventh-round pick last year, 2023 out of Iowa State? Look, this is a guy whose story I really like, and I've talked about it before, but if you don't know Anthony Johnson Jr.'s story, this is a guy who played 5 years at Iowa State. The first 4 years, he was a cornerback, and he was being projected in the NFL draft as probably a better safety candidate than a corner candidate, cornerback candidate. But he decided to return to school for one extra year because he wanted to get some experience under his belt playing the safety position. I believe it was his D-backs coach at Iowa State who kind of convinced him, hey, one more year wouldn't hurt you. Let's convert you over to a safety. So he played some safety in college. Packers take a flyer on him in the seventh round last year, and obviously that's a position group that was no good for the Packers last year. So he got a lot of experience as a rookie, but he's still playing in the preseason because I think the Packers feel better about, obviously, Xavier McKinney, but they also feel better about Javon Bullard and Evan Williams, who have much more experience at the safety position than Johnson, despite his 1 year in the pros. Great hit on a Ravens running back on Saturday. And then a great scoop and score for him, which led to a Lambeau leap on Saturday, a defensive touchdown for Anthony Johnson Jr. So for a guy that is being projected as maybe your fourth or fifth safety to make this 53-man roster, I think you feel pretty good about his preseason contributions so far through the three games. Not so far, but through the three preseason games this preseason. So Anthony Johnson Jr. is a guy who I'm excited to see what contributions he can make in year two. Though he won't be a starting safety, he'll still probably get some run on the field, and he'll obviously have some special teams opportunities. So Anthony Johnson Jr., a really strong Saturday, a really strong preseason, and he gets a stock up from me. The final stock down is a conversation we'll get deeper into in a moment, but we do have to acknowledge Anders Carlson missed the kick on Saturday. Yeah, he did it again. A week after Greg Joseph misses a kick in a preseason game last week against the Denver Broncos, you get another opportunity. Anders Carlson misses a kick on Saturday. He goes 1-for-2. He did make the 54-yarder. It wasn't pretty in both of his extra point attempts, but Greg Joseph making both of his attempts. He was 2-for-2 in terms of field goals. So to kick off the game, Anders Carlson, a 54-yarder, good. And then Greg Joseph follows that up a couple drives later, a 36-yard field goal, good. The make and the longest make for anybody was Greg Joseph with a 55-yard make. But Carlson misses a 32-yard field goal in his final attempt of the game. So it's hard to look at this and say, yeah, you feel really confident about your kicker. I think he's going to win the job. But a 32-yard miss? Can't have that come regular season time. We'll dive a little bit deeper into the kickers momentarily. Final stock up. Let's go to the running back room, because I think if anybody offensively, especially in that room, makes a case to make the roster this preseason, that would be Emmanuel Wilson. And Wilson didn't get a ton of run on Saturday. He had 11 carries, but so did Nate McCrary. Ellis Merriweather, the lead back, had 16 carries on Saturday. 11 carries, 52 yards, a 4.7 average, and a long of 12 yards for Emmanuel Wilson. But that caps a preseason of 37 carries, 160 yards, and a touchdown to go along with three catches for 37 yards. He averaged over 4 yards a carry. That's more than A.J. Dillon did last year. I'm in on Emmanuel Wilson. I think he'll make the roster. because I would guess they're going to carry three backs, and either Marshawn Lloyd or A.J. Dillon will be put on the PUP list or the short-term IR to start the season as they both deal with injuries. Lloyd, a hamstring, and a stinger for Dillon. I would guess one of those two guys is on the IR or PUP list or something to kind of give them a little bit of time to figure out if they want to carry four running backs, or is it time to say adios to A.J. Dillon? Because you're not cutting Marshawn Lloyd a draft pick. Every draft pick that the Packers made this offseason is going to make the roster. Emmanuel Wilson has a really, really good case to make the roster, though. He was the best back this preseason and another nice game on Saturday. So Emmanuel Wilson is making a really interesting case to make the Packers roster. One way or another, I think he's got a really good shot with another game. That looked really nice for him on Saturday. Still do want to talk about the quarterback two battles, the kicking battles, and the fact that we are just 1 week, a little over 1 week away from the start of the regular season, as the Packers will take on the Eagles in Sao Paulo, Brazil next Friday night. Football is coming quick. Cut down day tomorrow. Thursday, we are 1 week away from the regular season opener for the reigning champion Chiefs, and then the very next day on Peacock and on your local markets in Milwaukee and Green Bay, you get Packers-Eagles. Can't wait for that. But first, we got to take a quick break. Got to tell you about my friends from Door County Distillery. Oh, baby, I love them. I love them. Bourbon was poured on Saturday. A couple brandy old fashions were getting mixed up on Saturday. Love to see it. DoorCountyDistillery.com for a huge list of unique cocktail recipes, as well as the retailers nearest you. Wherever you get great booze, you can find Door County Distillery, whether it's their whiskeys, bourbons, or bourbon. Single malt whiskey, 27-time gold medal award winner, the rye whiskey, the cherry brandy, the apple brandy, the gin, the rum, the vodkas. Do it right. Door County Distillery's tailgating season approaches. DoorCountyDistillery.com. We step aside for 30 seconds. When we return, more Packers conversation. I also want to talk a little bit about the Brewers, who are 20 games above 500 as September quickly approaches this weekend already. And as always, we wrap up the show with what we learned. All still ahead after this word from Door County Distillery. I'm Mr. Irrelevant. I'm Alex Strofe. Back in Carlsville at the legendary Door County Distillery with my buddy Rob from Door County Distillery. And we have a Door County Distillery exclusive in front of us right now, Rob. Cherries, bourbon, two of my favorite things. Put them together. You got right. Door County Distillery beautiful. Cherry bourbon. It's beautiful. We're just doing shots?
Yeah. We're just going to celebrate. Straight up. I mean, it is good for mixed drinks. You put it in old fashions, Manhattans, but sometimes you just want to straight up take a little shot of it.
I won't complain about that. Like I said, two of my favorite things, cherries, bourbon, Door County cherries, bourbon. I can't complain. Yeah. Cheers to you, buddy. Thanks Cheers. A lot.
Prost.
Ooh, that's tasty. Oh, that's good.
Yep.
That's really smooth.
Get that cherry flavor. Yep. Not a whole lot of burn. Beautiful.
That's terrific. Door County Distillery exclusive, the cherry bourbon.
Check out their website with a huge list of unique cocktail recipes at DoorCountyDistillery.com. That's DoorCountyDistillery.com. DoorCountyDistillery.com, the place to go to find unique cocktail recipes and the retailer nearest you. Okay, both of these battles intrigue everybody because I think they are the two most closely competitive battles, and not in a good way, as we exit preseason and training camp for the Green Bay Packers. So let's start with quarterback two, because we just talked about Sean Clifford. He's stocked down. Michael Pratt looked good, but he's raw. He's brand new. If Jordan Love goes down, I don't think either of those guys should be the long-term replacement. And God forbid, right? Like, I think Jordan Love is going to be a surefire MVP candidate here in 2024. I think he's going to have a terrific second season as the starting quarterback of the Green Bay Packers. But there are clear issues, fundamental issues, when it comes to Sean Clifford and when it comes to Michael Pratt. Both of those guys make me nervous. So if Jordan Love is to go down for more than, let's just say, a few quarters, I don't feel good about those guys leading the charge. And maybe my tune changes on Pratt after some more experience under his belt. But nothing from the preseason made me go, whoa, yeah, he's got a strong future as a quarterback in the league. Right? Like, I see Jarrett Stidham, who lost the starting quarterback job for Denver to Bo Nix. And I saw he was quoted as saying, I'm a starting caliber quarterback in the NFL. Right? Like, I don't have that confidence for Jarrett Stidham, but I also don't have that confidence for Michael Pratt or Sean Clifford. So ideally, right, you want probably Michael Pratt to take the backup job and you just hope you don't see him all season unless it's a victory formation or you're up by 40 points in a playoff game against the Dallas Cowboys, Hunter. So I don't know. I would guess Michael Pratt is going to be the backup quarterback, and they'll probably stash Sean Clifford on the practice squad because I don't think any phones are kicking down the door to sign or any teams are kicking down the door or ringing the phone to sign Sean Clifford. I just don't think that's happening. So my ideal scenario as it stands right now is Love, obviously, and Pratt make the 53-man roster tomorrow. Sean Clifford stashed on the practice squad, and you just have more time to develop those guys. That's the ideal situation to me. Not so ideal is the kicking situation. Greg Joseph misses one in preseason game two. Anders Carlson misses a chip shot in preseason game three. Neither of them have been consistent at camp. Neither of them have been reliable at camp. And nothing has happened where you go, yeah, that's our kicker of the future. So you don't feel good about this. Anders Carlson's going to win the job. Ty goes to the incumbent. The incumbent's Anders Carlson. They're going to give him another rep. Now, how long is the leash for Anders Carlson? Let's say he misses a 35-yard kick week one against the Eagles. Does he make it to week? I don't know. I would guess Anders Carlson is probably the kicker all season. But I don't feel great about that. We do have breaking news coming across from the NFL. As I do want to get some reaction. Hunter, please pop on camera, please, because it is Dallas Cowboys related. As the Dallas Cowboys and all-pro wide receiver CeeDee Lamb have agreed to a four-year extension worth $136 million. $100 million of that is guaranteed. And a wide receiver record $38 million signing bonus. That, according to Adam Schefter of ESPN. He is now the second highest paid non-quarterback in NFL history. Torrey Dandy of CAA negotiated the deal with the Cowboys. CeeDee Lamb and the Cowboys have agreed to a four-year extension. We go to the resident Cowboys fan, Hunter Vaughn. Tiny hands?
I'm good with it. He's going to have to try and carry this offense, especially once Dak leaves after this season, and he's going to have like Grayson McCall as his quarterback because Jerry will draft him in like the fourth round or something. So it's great. They need all the help that they can get once Dak leaves, even though he is mid. But like, yeah, it's great. I'm excited. I'm happy. I'm glad that he's not going to be holding out and I don't have to watch him sitting out like tweeting or anything like that during the game. Like, huh, would have been nice to have a receiver there on third and five, wouldn't it?
Yeah, sure would have been. The Groundhog has arrived. Joshy DiMaggio has put on the headphones. The record-breaking deal for CeeDee Lamb and Hunter's response as a Cowboys fan, making him pop his head up. Go ahead, Joshy.
I have no real reaction to the CeeDee Lamb stuff. He's a good wide receiver, pay him.
Yes, that's accurate.
Makes sense. Yep. But I do want to discuss, have you seen the Clarence Hill piece when he spoke to Jerry Jones just like over the weekend?
I did not, no.
Will you get a chance to take a look at it? Because in it, Jerry Jones basically says, I'm the best GM possible. Nobody could do this like me. Why would anybody ever question my ability to do this job? And everybody who says I'm wrong doesn't know what they're talking about. It's an pretty impressive. Hunter, did you read it by chance?
No, because like I saw some people tweet about that and basically say the same thing. And like, if you're not a Cowboys fan, so the story I always tell about Jerry Jones is the fact that when he and his wife were building a house, she fell in love with some marble countertops from Italy, but he didn't like the price, so he bought the marble quarry to make money off of it and then get the marble she wanted for their kitchen. Like, that's the level of ego that man has. So, like, nothing he says ever surprises me. And it's so funny to me when people are like, oh, wow, that's crazy he said that. I'm like, nah, it's not really. If, like, you follow this team enough, you know that he's a lunatic and would think that. Like, honestly, the real genius when it comes to their drafting and anything good that they do is his son, Steven. But no, Jerry's crazy. Like, dude needs to step aside, but he won't.
Imagine if that was the Packers.
Thankfully, it's not.
You guys would have... Look, it would be even more fun.
I'd have a lot of fun talking about Jerry.
Oh, it would be so fun.
Okay, from what we do perspective, like what our jobs are, absolutely.
As a fan, I would despise it.
Oh, yeah.
I want to ring his neck.
Right? Like, I already have issues with Mark Murphy, who's just the president and CEO, and I think he's a dork, right?
And he's kind of just like a face.
I forgot to tell you guys. I saw Mark Murphy on Thursday.
Dap him up? Say sup?
I did say sup, so I will get to that here in a second. So I was up at Lambeau Field. I was meeting with some friends and his parents, who I have a friend that lives out of state, and he was home, and his parents wanted to grab lunch with me and my girlfriend. And we got lunch at 1919 at Lambeau, the day of the joint practice. And as I'm kind of just walking around the parking lot as practice is going on, you can't really find a spot to go, so I went back over to Lambeau, walking around. Mark Murphy's walking right by me. I go, Mark? I just go, Mark? Give him a head nod. He goes, hey, how are you? So I'm good, Mark. How are you? He goes, oh, I'm good. And he just keeps walking in his golf polo. Yeah, just casually walking around. Nobody's talking to him. So, like, I don't know if I'm alone in my thought that he's a dork or if I'm alone in did people not really realize that was Mark Murphy? But he just goes, oh, how are you? And I'm good. He's a strange fella.
Yeah, I guess I would probably do the same, but I don't know if I'd stop to have a conversation with him.
Oh, I kept walking.
So it's probably a lot of head nods he gets, and people just keep it moving.
I just go, Mark. All right. Okay. Yeah, he's an interesting fella. But anyway. All right, we're a little over 1 week. And also, I do have the Jerry Jones piece open that you were referencing. So here we go. Quote, and there's nobody living that's out cutting and shooting that can't give you a bunch of times they busted their ass. So hell no. There's nobody that could bleeping come in here and do all the contracts and be a GM any better than I can, end quote, from Jerry Jones.
Uh-huh.
Yikes. The ego is,
yeah.
Ego's running rampant. For a guy that hasn't won a real big game in like 30 years.
Yep.
It's a tough look.
Yeah. And those big games were won because your head coach was your GM and it was Jimmy Johnson. What also makes this really bad is when you break down their contracts compared to like the way that the Packers have theirs structured. Like the Packers are running circles around the Cowboys. Like they actually understand that like, oh, you can guarantee money in different ways and do different things so your cap hit isn't as high and then it doesn't hurt you down the road. Like they backload every contract. It's terrible. It's the worst. Why'd you have to get me going about Jerry Jones? You couldn't just let me be happy about CeeDee Lamb.
Well, I feel like it was worth bringing up given the fact that, you know, CeeDee Lamb just signed a massive contract extension. My hair is a disaster today. Goodness gracious. All right. Let's roll on.
That's what happens when you skip Joe.
Yeah, clearly. All right. We're a little over 1 week away from the opener. Packers-Eagles in Brazil coming up next Friday. And it just got me thinking about, you know, how we got here. Right? As we reflect over the last 7 months, lots happened. Packers beat the Cowboys on the road. They lose to San Francisco in a game they probably shouldn't have lost in the divisional round. Still feel that way. They add Xavier McKinney. They add Josh Jacobs. They bid adieu to Aaron Jones. Jordan Love becomes the highest paid quarterback in the NFL in terms of an annual basis. Matt LaFleur fires Joe Barry, hires Jeff Hafley. There is a philosophical change defensively. Both in a base defense, but just overall when it comes to play calling and play design and how you get the most out of your defense. A lot has changed. Now, we've seen a little bit of the product, both offensively and defensively, through the three preseason games. Jordan Love played three snaps in the preseason. Josh Jacobs, the new running back, played three snaps in the preseason. Xavier McKinney barely played in the preseason. Quay Walker, Jair Alexander, etc. Didn't see much of them, if you did at all. We officially get to see what this team is a little bit over a week from today. And look, I have a lot of faith in Philadelphia. I don't have a ton of faith in their head coach, but they have a really good roster. So this is a great challenge to start off the regular season. But everything we've questioned and wondered for the last 6 months finally gets put on display next Friday. Jordan Love got paid like the highest paid quarterback in football. Now, can he play like it? Josh Jacobs brings kind of a durable bell cow back style. Bell cow, got it right this time. Back style to this Green Bay offense. Will they run him like that? Can the wide receivers take the next step? Romeo Dobbs had a good camp. Dontayvion Wicks had a good camp. Christian Watson seemingly healthy. Can he stay healthy? And oh yeah, what's Jaden Reed going to do for this offense? The guy who I think will end up being the Packers' leading receiver in 2024. Will the tight ends take the next step? What's the offensive line going to look like? All these questions we've been asking and wondering and thinking about and seeing in training camp and seeing minimally in preseason games finally comes to a head. So my mic falls. Enjoy the next week. Because this is go time. We finally get a product. We finally get to see what this hype is about. And maybe it starts 1-0. Maybe it starts 0-1. But regardless, this is a playoff team. This is a team with championship aspirations. The championship window is open. Can they take that next step? We will all find out together a little over a week from now. All right, let's wrap up. Talking a little Brewers as they wrap up a weekend series with an off day today, but they get back at it at home against the San Francisco Giants tomorrow. We're approaching September. There's a couple of games left here in the month of August, including Friday's doubleheader in Cincinnati against the Reds. But a four-game series technically against the Reds starting Friday. Two games Friday, one at 11:40, one at 5:40, and then a 6:15 Saturday and an 11:10. On Sunday, after a three-game series here at home, the next 3 days after today, against the San Francisco Giants. This is a team, as we talked about last Monday, that is looking like one of the best in baseball. They sweep the Cleveland Guardians when that was the team with the best record in baseball. Then they have kind of a blunder last week against the Cardinals, but able to respond and respond well against the Oakland A's. An 11-3 win Friday, a 9-5 win on Saturday, and then a 4-3 loss yesterday to the A's. But still, a series win. Still, 20 games over 500 at 75-55 on the year. And a lot of home games to play in the month of September. This is a team that's going to be vying for the top spot in the National League if they keep playing the way they're playing. 7-3 in their last 10. If that's the way they continue to operate, this is going to be a team that legitimately has a chance to be the best, at least record-wise, in the National League. As it stands right now, they are a game back of the Philadelphia Phillies for the second seed and 2.5 games back of the Los Angeles Dodgers for the top seed in all of baseball. Dodgers 78-53, Phillies 76-54, and as mentioned, the Brewers 75-55, half game back of the Arizona Diamondbacks, who currently hold the top wild card spot in the NL. This is a team that's found ways to win unlike any team I remember. The different starting pitchers, the injuries between pitching, and now Christian Yelich out for the season with the back injury. They've got a lot to prove, and I think they've got a good opportunity to do that this week against a middle of the pack, actually directly 500, 66-66, San Francisco Giants team. And then, you know, as I mentioned, you've got a couple of in-division series coming up. You've got a ton of homestands in the month of September. This is a team that's going to have a really good opportunity to vie for either that top spot, and if not, that second seed in all of the NL. As long as no more injuries hit this team, as long as the injury bug stays away now, because it hasn't to start this season, as we get down to the nitty-gritty of things, it's a team that's going to have a really good shot come October, Hunter.
Yeah, and I think this might be the stretch of baseball that's going to really define this team. Because, like you went through, they start this series against the Giants on Tuesday. They don't get a day off then until the following Thursday with a doubleheader mixed in there. So that's a ton of baseball that they're going to be playing on, you know, one day after the next. And it is going to be a grind. And when you're such a young team like this, these guys are, how they respond to that is going to be so important. Because, yeah, it's one thing when you play a three-game series and then, okay, you got a day off and then you're back to another one. But to have to play this many games in a row the way that the Brewers are, for a guy like Jackson Churio, it's going to really define the type of season that he's had. Because if he falls apart at the tail end of this, you know, stretch, all of a sudden – that potential getting that for that bye in the NL is gone, and that's what we're going to remember about him, And it doesn't matter what he plays like in September unless he all of a sudden has some absurd streak to like really change that. But like that's what could happen here in these next couple of days. This might be the most important regular season baseball that this team sees just because of the lead that they have in the division. They could lock things up with this. I know that they're not at their magic number or anything like that yet. So like mathematically they wouldn't. But they go through this next stretch over this next week and they suddenly push this to a 14-game lead. Like it's all over. They've got the division locked up.
When do we start looking at magic numbers? Like, I know it's high right now. I think it's technically in the 30s yet because there's still so much ball game left to be played. But when do we start looking at magic numbers? September?
Yeah.
Mid-September? When do we actually start looking at it?
Let me tell you, the magic number is not in the 30s. I believe it's in the 20s by now. And people have been tracking it since it was in the 40s.
Well, who's people?
People on the internet who are Brewers fans that talk about it for a living.
Okay, now... Yeah. You and I, though, we need to dictate, and Hunter as well, the three of us need to dictate when exactly we actually start looking at it. The fact that you are already looking at it means we should already be looking at it, I would assume.
I'm not. I only care
about... But you know what it is.
Yeah, you just see it. I mean, I retain information I read. That's kind of important, integral part to everything we do.
That
here.
Was an unnecessary shot. Go on.
All I'm looking at is, can they get the bye? That's the number I'm keeping the closest track of. I'm watching that second spot in the NL, and can the Brewers take it and get into that bye? Because if you get the bye, you need to be an NLCS team. Like, that's obviously baseball is baseball, but the expectations would be sky high, and the excuses would be done. You got to perform.
So there is a Twitter account called Brewers Magic Num, N-U-M, with about 3,000 followers. They have not tweeted.
They missed a couple days?
Yeah, they haven't tweeted in a few days. It says it's 23.
Yeah.
Or 22, I would guess that.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. Well, so if somebody could double check my math on that.
We could say like September 10th for looking at it. Then that's when they're starting their series at San Francisco, because the problem is they go through a stretch here where they don't play anybody in the division. After they'll play St. Louis again here in September, they've got three games, and that series then wraps up September 4th. They don't play another divisional game until the Pirates 20 days later. So like,
are we still keeping eyes on the division?
Well, I mean, I've
moved past that.
Yeah, I've also moved past that.
Yeah, I know. I was just like, I brought it up and I was just saying that like, that's where, I mean,
no,
it fully becomes irrelevant.
I'm not saying it to be like critical of you or being a jerk.
Yeah.
Like, are you still worried about the division at all? Or are you kind of in the same spot we are?
After the St. Louis series, like, I wasn't freaking out the way that Tony Cartagena was on Friday. Uh-huh. But like, it was one of those where I'm like, oh, like the Cardinals are just weird like that when it gets to September. But now I'm
10 game late.
Yeah.
Too cushy.
I know. Baseball's weird, man. The month of September in baseball is weird and crazy stuff.
Josh, he loves a cushy lead.
I'm counting my playoff wins. How many are we getting?
12.
World Series?
No. Okay.
I'm ready, you guys are joking. I legitimately think this could be a World Series team.
I think they can make it. I think setting the expectations there is crazy.
Oh, NLCS? Okay.
They're plenty good to be playing in NLCS, yep. And for it to be a competitive series.
Yeah, I mean, I'm worried if they give up early leads. If Freddie can be Freddie, and Freddie hasn't fully been Freddie this year, but if he in September and October can become Freddie, if Colin Ray continues to pitch the way he has, if Tobias Myers continues to pitch the way he has, that's three good arms you feel pretty comfortable about. And I mean, look, when you look up and down the league, there's probably several teams that have three arms they feel pretty good about. But I don't know that anybody entering the season was going, yeah, Colin Ray. I don't think anybody knew who Tobias Myers was entering this season. So to be in the position they are now, where they legitimately have three solid arms, and the bats have been cooking the way they have the last couple of weeks, this is a team that should make some noise in the postseason. So 12, Joshy. NLDS, four wins? That's not a seven-game series, is it?
No.
Is that five-game?
I think that's a five-game series. Yep. So actually, 11.
Yeah.
11 wins in the postseason. Three in the NLDS, four in the NLCS. That's seven. Plus four more in the World Series is 11.
Yeah.
11 wins.
Wow. Heard it here first. Clip it. Put it out.
I've already got my chair out on Wisconsin Ave, which I don't know if that's where they'll do the parade. That's more a Bucks parade. Where would they do the Brewers parade? Over by the stadium?
No, I would imagine it would be downtown here.
Okay, so then my chair is safe for it.
Well, how do you envision a parade going? Would they just do it around the outsides of AmFam Field there?
Like yeah, everybody
road,
tailgates?
That road, that circle? Not a bad
be a
idea,
fun party.
Honestly.
Yeah, I kind of like that.
Yeah,
sure would be. Thank you. Thank you. Well, we could keep talking about it. They've never had one, so
I do
there
imagine,
is no wrong answers.
As crazy as it sounds, I don't think there would be enough space. I don't think enough people could go. Because we're talking, if everyone shows up for that, we're
that's
talking multiple hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Yeah. I don't know if there'd be enough space.
Shut down 94. Let us tailgate in the middle of 94.
People just that's up on the do. Interchange.
Just pumping their arms. Yeah. That's the way it should be. All right, time now for what we learned. We start with Tiny Hands. Hunter, what'd you learn?
Well, I showed this to Josh, and because you were gone, I just have to show you again because it's the greatest thing in the world. Starting quarterback for the Raiders, Gardner Minshew, working out to Creed.
Yes. Let's make our escape. Come on, let's go there. Let's go there. Let's ask, can we stay? Can you take me higher? It's a good music break. If we're just going to randomly play music during the show, I want it to be Creed.
It's the only band you can pick.
He's beautiful. The mullet's flowing. The mustache is in prime condition. Minshew looks good, man. I'm excited to see what he does with Davante Adams.
I've got less to say about Minshew than I do about Creed. Creed is all the way back.
Oh, they've been all the way back, though.
They should have never left.
And they are selling out so many stadiums, and it's all a lot of guys who look a lot like us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can do with that what you will.
Are you aware where their first tour stop was?
Not a clue.
Green Bay.
Green Bay, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Green Bay, Wisconsin is where that tour
know.
Began.
Also, I played some Creed at the party on Saturday. Everyone loved it. Everyone sing.
You said the party like we know what you're talking about. So Josh's birthday is tomorrow. Happy birthday, Josh.
Thank you.
You had a birthday party.
Sure did.
And you played Creed, and everybody was jamming.
Oh, they were. Yeah.
The wedding I was at on Saturday, the DJ actually did like a pop punk hour or half hour.
Oh,
I sang every word.
Yeah, that happened much similar at my sister's wedding. I mean, it's obviously the people who are getting married have a lot of influence on that.
Correct.
Yeah, I heard a lot of that music, and I was out there. Let me tell you.
I bet you were.
Yeah.
Bet you were. All right. What'd you learn, Joshy?
I learned this coming from Peyton Malone of WWL TV. You're not the only thing sweating. Look at the high blob of humidity in the Midwest. That's from corn sweat.
What's corn sweat?
Corn releases a lot of moisture in the summer, and that means higher humidity. So in the Midwest, we are suffering from abnormally high levels of humidity because of the corn and it expelling moisture. I never knew that. Lived here my whole life.
I've never heard of that.
I'm right there with you, brother.
So, do we need to, like, switch crops then? Because, like, I don't know if I want to be living around something that's going to cause worse humidity. Like, it's already bad enough. Like, can we switch to wheat or something?
I was sitting
can we
here...
switch to wheat
I was
something?
Sitting here thinking, like, you mean to tell me, like, all those late August months where I'm sweating my bees off? That's because of the abnormally high amount of corn we produce here? I want out.
Yeah, not yeah, worth it.
I guess I'm confused by all of this.
Yeah. How is
I'm having a hard time grasping
sweat?
This. Are we sure this is real? Are we sure this isn't just a meme sweeping the internet from this lady
Did
from
Josh
what, say, WWL TV?
This is the morning meteorologist in New Orleans. He has 8,800 followers. University of Oklahoma, WWL TV.
Interesting.
Yeah, but what does somebody from New Orleans know about corn?
I do want to confirm. I looked up corn sweat. It is a thing, and there's a whole term for what corn does when it expels excess moisture.
So corn sweat equals humidity?
Yes, because it puts it into the atmosphere. And there's such, I mean,
drive around the surrounding Midwestern states, what do you see? Whole lots of corn.
Wow.
Yeah, I kind of feel like we got the raw end of the stick here.
Yeah, I'm kind of out on corn now.
I think I'm out of corn too. I love corn though, which is really disappointing.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
but it's the reason we is it the only reason we have humidity?
I don't believe it's the only, but it is a contributing factor.
Wow!
Right now, across America, we are having in the Midwest are having abnormally high levels compared to everyone else due to corn.
I don't know how to transition out of this to what I was going to talk about.
Can we just blame Nebraska? So it's another reason to hate Matt Rhule.
Yeah, I'm good with that.
Nebraska is right in the epicenter, but Wisconsin, we ain't helping.
We ain't helping.
No, but it's Nebraska's fault.
Shout out to the corn, I guess. I was going to talk about how NIL is still making history. We're still getting first time NIL deals.
Nothing. It's not going to do anything like corn sweat.
Well, Cooper Flagg, who's a 17-year-old basketball player, committed to Duke. He reclassified, and is the number one overall prospect. Not this past, but next year's NBA draft. He has signed a shoe endorsement deal with New Balance before ever playing a collegiate game. Which is bananas to me. Now, on the football side, the University of Connecticut, UConn, has become the first college football program to have a sponsor logo on their football field after a change of rules from the NCAA playing rules oversight panel, giving colleges and universities permission to put sponsorship logos on their field. So Stores Central will be UConn's official sponsor on their field. So their field will have logos on them. Cooper Flagg is signing sneaker deals. NIL knows no limits, man. And it is officially professional athletics, which is disappointing.
When you say NIL, did you see the story that broke, I believe it was Ross Dellinger, it was last week sometime, that somebody from Colorado, their football program, went over to Saudi Arabia to try and get NIL for the fund that they have there, the one that created Live Golf.
Yeah.
The guy said that he did it on his own accord and that nobody at Colorado had any idea about it. Do with that information what you will. I find that suspect.
Well,
highly.
It's Connor Stallion's Michigan stuff all over again. Nobody had any idea.
We don't know what that guy was doing, why he would spend
his
holidays.
Why would he do that? Look, I've got Dion fatigue. I saw that he also banned a reporter from asking him questions this year, which I think is just about as goofy as you can possibly be as a head coach and the figurehead of a program.
It's not especially just goofy, at the collegiate level. Soft. Like, call it what it is.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, it's soft. No, you're right. Yeah, I will call it what it is. You're absolutely right about that. So, I've got Dion fatigue. I don't want to give any more light to the Buffs, Joshy. I'm over the Buffs.
Well, we're talking about them, but poorly.
You're right. You're right about that. More reaction to the preseason. Cut down day coming tomorrow. Any surprising cuts we'll react to on Wednesday as we lead up to, week one of the NFL season next Friday. Packers-Eagles in Brazil. Also, college football week one starts on Friday for the Wisconsin Badgers. They host Western Michigan. Plenty of football preview to get into the remainder of the week. And then next week, full steam ahead. We're going to have a little bit of a new look on our YouTube stream, ESPN Madison, ESPN Milwaukee, also ESPN Madison on Facebook. But the audio side will stand exactly the same. It's Mr. Irrelevant presented by Door County Distillery. Thanks to Joshy. Thanks to Hunter. I'm Alex Strope. We'll talk to you Wednesday. Peace.